Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today, together with my co-host, Kay Patak. Hello, Kay.
Hello, Ursula. And hello to you, the listener. Our resident naturalist has got some news about bumblebees for us in a minute. But first, let's start with some brief news about the weather. It seems that the proverb about the month of March is reversing itself. March came in like a lamb, but sometimes it seems as if it's going out like a lion. But by the look of the forecast, we should be getting some sun this weekend, at least on Sunday. And today, Friday, should be mostly sunny. Getting more cloudy this afternoon, I believe. There's a possibility of some rain, but it should hold off until tonight. Saturday has the highest possibility of precipitation, but it should be light in this area. Temperatures are forecast to be just slightly lower than today. Highs about 49 degrees Fahrenheit and lows in the low 30s. Sunday should be mostly sunny with temperatures about the same. And by Monday, it should be getting warmer and clearer. I don't know how this weather affects the bees, but we'll hear about that from Pat.
Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. The first hepatica of spring or the last osprey of autumn are recorded in a journal for future reference. And today's focus on phenology are the bumblebees have returned. Got a call the other day from Paul Hellenschmidt. Let me know that he had seen a bumblebee. So I thought, what do I know about bumblebees? Well, here's what I've learned. Bumblebees are big, fuzzy insects recognized by almost everyone by their robust shape and black and yellow coloration. The common species are 3/4 inch in length or more, and like honeybees, bumblebees live in a colony where the adults care for the young, the larva, produced by the single queen. Bumblebee nests are small compared to honeybees, as each nest contains a few hundred individuals. Also, unlike honeybees, a bumblebee nest is annual and is used only 1 year and then abandoned. Bumblebees may reappear in the same area from 1 year to the next, but they do not reuse an old nest. Bumblebee colonies are usually underground in a deserted mouse or bird nest, though they are occasionally found within walls, cavities, or even in the vents of a clothes dryer on the side of your house, disappointingly. In the spring, each new queen selects a nest site and starts a new colony. She lines the cavity with dry moss or grass and then collects pollen and nectar to produce a stored food called bee bread. Her first brood of offspring, 15 to 20 members, will all be workers or daughters who take over the colony responsibilities of nest enlargement, food gathering and storage, and feeding and caring for the larva. The queen continues to lay eggs throughout the summer. By late summer, new reproductive males and females, the kings and queens, are produced. These mate on the wing, and the fertilized females move to a hibernation site in the shelter of loose bark, hollow trees, or other dry, protected places to lie dormant through the winter. The males and workers still in the colony die with frost or the first hard freeze. If the vicinity of a bumblebee nest cannot be avoided, then leave them alone and wait for them to die in the fall as the preferred management option. Live trapping bumblebees for relocation is not practical, and covering the nest entrance does not usually solve the problem. But in the meantime, realize they're another pollinator whose numbers we cherish for the pollination work that they provide. And keep looking up. The bumblebees are with us once again. That's our phenology for today.
Resident naturalist Pat Schlaubaum. Later in the second half of the show, we'll be hearing from members of the Ames Progressive Alliance.
A native author of Iowa, Stephen W. Horn, will be at Chocolatery Stamm on Main Street in downtown Ames on Wednesday afternoon and evening. There will be a reading of his book at 6 p.m. And afterwards, there'll be wine tasting and also live music to go along with the book signing. Mr. Horn is a native of Iowa, but in his adulthood, he moved west, first to Colorado and then to Wyoming. His original degree was in wildlife, and he became a professor of animal science. and then served as Dean of the College of Agriculture at the University of Wyoming. He's always been a writer, but these days he's a full-time novelist. Mr. Horn is a Vietnam veteran, and his first novel, Another Man's Life, was about a Vietnam vet. And most recently, he's been producing a series of mystery novels featuring an amateur detective named Sam Dawson. The first novel in the series, The Pumpkin Eater, won an award, the Benjamin Franklin Gold Award in Mystery and Suspense. Mr. Horn will be in Iowa next week doing the book signing and reading in Ames and meeting with book clubs at the library in Huxley. We telephoned Mr. Horn to talk about his trip to Iowa and about his books and these events. He is speaking with us from his home in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Welcome to Local Talk, Stephen Horn.
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
It's interesting to hear your background and how all this ended up at this point in your life with being an author about mysteries. The novel you'll be signing and reading Wednesday is called When Good Men Die. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I believe that it includes flashbacks that take place in Iowa.
Yes, as a matter of fact, all of my books, when I was thinking about the telephone interview this morning, I remembered that there are aspects of my Iowa upbringing in virtually all of my books. When Good Men Die, the book that we will be signing on Wednesday, March 30th, there in Ames at Chocolatery Stahm's, has mentions of Ames. Matter of fact, the protagonist in the book, a character by the name of Hans Gottlieb, went to Iowa State College, which was, of course, the predecessor of Iowa State University.
So this novel takes place in the past, then?
Parts of it. It's flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
It's
okay.
The protagonist is a 99-year-old man with dementia in a nursing home in northern Minnesota. And he has flashbacks. He prefers to live in the past. He goes back almost at will. Mm. And he was a student at Iowa State College from 1926 through 1928. He was a former Olympian. He was a wrestler. He was on a full-ride scholarship at Iowa State College, the forerunner of Iowa State University. 1936, there was a chapter in Boone, and then again in 1949. And lots of mentions of Maquoketa and Clinton.
Hmm. So what happens in one of these flashbacks in Iowa? Tell us one flashback.
One of the flashbacks has to do with Sam meeting the love of his life in Boone. She's a physician. Her name's Gloria from Minnesota. And there's, I think, some really nice descriptions of the Iowa countryside, you know, the pastoral countryside. And I think a lot of people are surprised to find that Iowa is an incredibly beautiful state. Most people think of Iowa strictly from an agrarian standpoint, that it's a sea of corn. Well, there's a lot more to Iowa than corn and soybeans, as you know.
And this is someone who's living in Wyoming.
That's true.
This is your second novel featuring amateur detective Sam Dawson. He is a hero? Do you consider him a hero?
No. Matter of fact, Sam is a bit of an unusual protagonist. He's an anti-hero. He's one of these people that has a real life that's somewhat complicated. It's somewhat troubled. He's the kind of protagonist people tend to identify with him because of his flaws. He disturbs, I think, the reader with his weaknesses. While I try to portray him sympathetically, but readers pretty much identify with him because he magnifies the frailties that I think most of us experience in life.
I gather he's been a popular character, at least he was, from the reception of your first book about him. People really seem to like him.
Yes, people do like him.
And he's...
And again, it's because I think they identify with him.
Yeah, but he's also, a quirky character. He drives an RV and he's got a bloodhound, I believe, a dog.
Yeah, he travels with a bloodhound. The bloodhound actually is just a companion. The bloodhound first appeared in The Pumpkin Eater, and that bloodhound no longer exists. When Good Men Die, he has another bloodhound that... A friend gave him in Maquoketa. The first bloodhound's name was L, E-L-L-E, named after the supermodel L McPherson. And this bloodhound is named L2, just a capital letter L, Arabic numeral 2.
Oh.
And it provides some relief, some comic relief for a very suspenseful book.
The book is really about elder people with dementia.
The book, I hope, gets people thinking about the elderly. You know, all of my books, I try to, one, entertain, of course, the reader, but I also want to leave that reader with a message, something that stays with them long after the book is finished. And in this book, I'd like the reader to really think about peeling away the complex layers that surround the elderly. You know, we look at the elderly and we read their obituaries in the paper. We know who they were. We know when they die, where they're from, who they left behind. But do we really know who that person was and who they aspired to be? We don't take the time to really understand that these people had a full life that oftentimes, but these people are related to us in some way, that shaped our lives. This book exposes the reader to the complexity of the human experience. And here's a character that has many secrets. And Sam, very, very carefully, over a fairly long period, starts to unravel those secrets. And it's what we call a Gordian knot. It's a mystery within a mystery within a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
So the critics that have reviewed the books say that if you're looking for a formula mystery suspense book, then don't read this one, because I don't follow a formula.
Well, that's
matter
great.
Of fact, I don't even read in that genre, and I do that on purpose. I purposely stay away from reading mystery suspense.
This character, Sam Dawson, he's part of a series. Do you think he's going to be around for a long time? Does he have a few more books in him?
I do. I've got several more planned. Matter of fact, and when you called this morning, I'm working on the next installment of the Sam Dawson mystery.
So you live with him?
I do. He's right here.
Is he a good person to live with?
He is a good person. I like Sam Dawson, as my readers tend to like Sam Dawson. He's not your typical sleuth. He's a photographer, and he gets pulled into these mysteries quite accidentally.
Uh-huh.
But he's also a guy who, who has innate curiosity. And when something troubles him, he can't resist trying to find out, why.
Uh-huh.
He's perpetually asking the question of why. He gets himself into some really interesting situations.
We're speaking with Stephen Horn, author and a native of Iowa, who's coming to Ames on Wednesday at Chocolatery Stom to do a book signing and also a reading. Will you be reading from this?
Matter of fact, yes. At the book signing is from 4 to 7. They're at 230 Main Street in Ames, and they're going to have a wine tasting and the musical talents of Paul Hertz.
That's right.
He'll be on the piano, and then at 6 p.m. I'll do a reading. And then on the following day, they're in the same area on Thursday, March 31st, from 6:30 to 8. I'll be doing a discussion with a number of area book clubs at the Huxley Public Library. And the primary work that I'll be discussing there is The Pumpkin Eater.
That's the first Sam Dawson mystery.
Right.
That book deals with the topic of eugenics.
Correct.
Okay.
That's an interesting topic for a lot of people. I'm surprised by how many people in this country today have not heard of eugenics, or when you mention it, they really don't understand what it is, but yet it was a very pervasive movement in this country for a number of decades.
And did not end well.
Did not.
So once again, we're speaking with Stephen Horn, and he'll be holding a book signing at Chocolatery Stom at 230 Main Street at Ames, and from 4 to 7 with a reading at 6. You'll be in Huxley, tell us again when?
On Thursday, March 31st, from 6:30 until 8 p.m.
Where?
And that will be at the public library,
at
right?
At the library.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Mr. Horn. I guess we'll see you soon here in Ames.
Thank you very much.
This is Local Talk. We've been speaking with author Stephen Horn, and we look forward to welcoming him here in Ames, his state of origin. As he mentioned, while he does his book signing and reading at Chocolatery Stam, there will be an event holding a wine tasting and musical performance by local musician Paul Hertz. Paul is, of course, host of two programs here at KHOI, Morning Masterpieces at 8 on Mondays and Ready Ames Fire at 4 on Thursdays. He's also an accomplished musician and composer, and he'll be improvising on the piano to fit the style and message of the reading that Mr. Horn will be doing. So it should be an interesting experience. And while we're on the topic of the piano at Chocolatery Stam, if you're one of the customers of Chocolatery Stam, you may know that the piano is a permanent fixture there and that there are live performances there as part of the store's experience. Another of the musicians who also performs there is Naomi Biela, who could be called a local treasure. You'll find Naomi playing the piano at Chocolatery Stam every Friday from 4 to 6 in the afternoon. Hello, Naomi.
Hi, Ursula. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. It's very nice to have you here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Naomi, how old are you?
I'm 15 years old.
Okay. So you're a musician who can be seen every Friday?
Indeed.
From 4 to 6?
Yes, ma'am.
How did you get into being a musician at Chocolatery Stam?
Oh, my goodness. Well, music has been a huge part of my life because both of my parents are musicians. They run Ames Music Studios and Ankeny School of Performing Arts. Part of the reason I got into Stam was it was actually kind of my mom's idea. She wanted me to have a place that I could go and perform that was sort of a smaller setting, but that I would be sort of out in the community.
She kind of got you out there in public.
Yes,
and
she
said,
definitely
start
did.
Start performing.
Yeah.
What kind of music do you play when you are at Chocolatery Stam?
Well, it's a range of music. For piano music, strictly, I usually play classical. But when I'm doing piano and vocal, it can be anything from classical to contemporary.
You sing as well as
yes,
play piano.
I do.
Uh-huh. What's it like performing at Stam?
It's extremely fun. I love it. It can be a little nerve-wracking at times, especially when you're trying to communicate with people and perform. But it's
what do you mean by that? You mean people talk to you?
Yeah, like when you're talking to people.
People come up to you? And
oh, yeah, definitely.
What do they say to you?
Well, they often ask, you know, how long have you been playing? You know, sometimes they'll ask what pieces I'm playing. They just want to talk to me about what I do.
You get a lot of attention while you're there. I mean, people listen to you.
Definitely.
They
uh-huh.
You get a good audience.
Yes, they're very good.
Yeah. Did it take you a while to get used to doing this?
It does. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've done it on and off, actually, for quite a few years. It does take a little while at first to just sort of make sure all my repertoire is ready for it. But then once I start doing it, it's natural.
How long have you been playing at Stam?
Oh, boy. I would say probably on and off for about 3 or 4 years at this point.
So that means that you started playing there when you were 11?
Yeah, thereabouts.
Uh-huh.
Gracious.
Yeah.
So was it intimidating at first, or was this just part of being a musician?
I think it was intimidating, yes, but it's, I mean, gosh, a musician performs all the time, you know, so why not get used to it at an early age, you know?
Okay, so tell us one of your more memorable experiences working at Stam.
I remember it was back several years ago. I was playing there one evening, and at that point I was only playing for like an hour and a half. But that night they were having the business after hours, and Terry, Mr. Stark, the owner of Chocolatery Stam, asked me to play there for the business after hours. And so I remember I was playing there for, gosh, it was probably close to 3 hours. And that was just, it was really fun to sort of, you know, be asked to do something extra. And there were a lot of people there, and it was really awesome.
Did they respond well to you?
Definitely, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there a tip jar at Stam?
The musicians have a tip jar, yes.
Uh-huh. So you're a working musician.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Are you planning to have a career in music?
That is my plan so far.
Does your family encourage you in that?
Absolutely, yes. They've been very supportive. I can't even say how much.
Yeah. And what would you like to do in your career?
To be in a band of some sort, probably a heavy rock metal band. You know, I'll probably, you know, do some teaching, possibly some performing, just of like piano and vocal. But a band would be really my number one pick.
Huh. Do you do the heavy rock at Stam?
to a certain extent. For contemporary, I do some pieces by bands like Nightwish or Evanescence, which fall more into that category. I mean, there's obviously limitations of what you can do with just a piano and voice. But
Is it correct that you also study Arabic?
I do, yeah. I take Arabic at ISU.
So what's that about?
I chose Arabic. Again, my mom helped me with that choice. But I wanted to take a foreign language. And Arabic is in the top four spoken languages in the world. But we don't have very many American people that speak it. And yet, you know, we have this whole Middle Eastern conflict. We have people coming over here from the Middle East. And it's like, well, maybe we should put a little effort to be able to speak their language, you know, because they do that for us.
And do you speak any other languages?
I sing in French, Italian, German, and English. Several years back, I took Mandarin Chinese, but I haven't really kept that up probably as well as I should.
You are getting prepared.
Absolutely, yes.
Naomi, thank you for coming in and telling us a little bit about it. Any last words about the music at STOM and just about being a musician in general? It sounds like you've thought about this a lot.
Well, yeah. I mean, my parents have pushed me a lot, and I'm extremely grateful to them for everything that they've done. I think STOM is a great place for really any musician to go and perform. They're extremely supportive, and they want people to come.
It's a baby grand, right?
Yeah, it is. Right. It's a baby grand, yeah. But it's a wonderful piano. You know, they keep it in really good condition.
Do you know why they've decided to combine a chocolate store with a great baby grand piano?
I mean, it kind of makes sense in a way. There's something very sort of romantic about it. And I think it's really cool that Ames has that, because there's very few places that even have a chocolatier, and it's a very unique place in Ames.
Naomi Biela, everybody. She's a local ascending musical talent, and you can hear her perform on the piano at Chocolatier STOM every Friday from 4 to 6 in the afternoon. And you did mention that your parents are musicians, too.
Yes, they are.
Tell us a little bit about what they do.
Oh, my goodness. Well, they run Ames Music Studios here in Ames, and then in Ankeny, the Ankeny School of Performing Arts. They've been doing that for more years than I can count. In the summers, they also run the Iowa School of Rock, which is basically a two-week rock camp where they put kids into bands. And then at the end, they have a full-blown rock concert, which is a great experience. I've done that since it pretty much started when I was about 4 years old.
So you really have it in your blood and in your whole life.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by and giving voice to really what's a treasured talent in our community.
Well, thank you for having me.
A really bright future. So good luck with all that.
And thanks
for coming by. And I think we're going to take a break with a piece of music. Would you explain what it is?
It's called Quasimodo. It was sort of based off of the story from The Hunchback of Notre Dame. It's like it's rock metal, sort of an art rock metal piece.
And who wrote it?
My dad and I wrote it.
Okay, so this is an original piece,
it
Quasimodo.
Is. Yeah.
But not for-
That was Quasimodo, an original piece by Naomi and Al Biela. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. For this final segment of today's show, I'd like to welcome two members of AIM's Progressive Alliance and the special guests they brought with them today. We have here in the studio with us Victoria Shapinski and Anne Kinzel. Welcome to all, and welcome to your guest, Jan Flora. I happen to know Jan, but would you like to introduce him and tell us what's happening on the progressive front?
Sure, and thank you. This is wonderful. We have been offered by KHOI this slot every last Friday of the month, and so we really appreciate being able to talk a little bit about what the Ames Progressive Alliance is up to and also bring to your attention things that we've found along the way. And we brought Jan Flora to join us today and to talk a little bit about the housing conference, which was incredible, well organized and very informative. And so we'll talk about that a little bit later in the hour. Anne and I wanted to start off by doing a little background and do that each month about who the Alliance is. And do you want to take it up from there?
Sure, Victoria. The Alliance, basically, we kicked off last summer with a rousing picnic in the park here in Ames, and to our great surprise, I think, despite fantastic organizing, we ended up with about 300-plus people who were interested in promoting and working for progressive values in Ames, and we haven't stopped since.
Nope. Since then, we held two forums, one for the city council candidates and another one for the school board candidates. I like to say we hit a world record, at least for Ames, on the number of people that attended a school board forum. Mm-hmm. We filled up the Farrell Brown Auditorium at the Ames Public Library. We've also, since then, been working on a couple of initiatives. Our mission is to, first I want to say, is to leverage community resources to make Ames better. Many of us have backgrounds in city government. We feel that that is really where things can happen. There are fewer people that you need to convince to, you know, make a change. And with that in mind, we have been working on the solar initiative, which is now something that is going to happen. It's just a case of figuring out how and when. The URAB board recently brought in a representative from Cedar Falls, where they have had a very successful solar array built. And that's the first step of looking at which model. There are several models, and which model will be the best fit for Ames. So we're moving in that direction. We're collecting signatures. It always helps to show that there's a lot of interest with lists of names of people in the community to participate in building this entity, which will lower your utility bill. And it's a very small investment for individuals. It's something like in the $300 range. And personally, and hopefully for many, the biggest positive out of all this is that it's moving us towards addressing climate change and moving away from the use of fossil fuels. We've also been working on a human services grant. There was a motion made at City Council last November to use monies in a fund balance from the local option sales tax and to create a grant program for local human service agencies and their capital improvement needs. We have written a letter to council that is moving along. We have a next step of bringing those entities together again. There are many in our community that have needs. Some agencies need new buildings like Friendship Arc Homes and Heartland Senior Services. But there are also smaller needs, like primary health that needs a $2,000 lead testing machine. So, and the list goes on, and I won't use up our time listing all of those, but it probably is no surprise to anybody that we have many needs in our community. Sometimes they're hidden, but they are great, just like too many other places in our country.
I think one of the things that's really interesting about how we operate, and there's a common thread.
This is Ann Kinzel now, by the way.
with what Victoria says, is that we are leveraging existing community initiatives and helping them perhaps move further than they had been prior. So that we have a broad range of people who are engaged in the Alliance from those original 300, and we hope always to recruit more. So check us out on Facebook under Ames Progressive Alliance. But we have really concentrated on finding existing folks in Ames who are engaged in what we call progressive priorities and trying to lend some of the expertise and energy that our members possess to help move them forward. And I think a great example is the solar array. Ann Kimber and Bob Haug were working very hard on that for a number of years and have done a lot of the spade work necessary to move this forward, and we were able to kind of help them go the last mile. So this thread is very common to what we do, and if you have an issue that you'd like to talk to us about, get us a hold of us. Send us a message on Facebook. We'll be happy to talk with you and see how we can help you move your progressive priority in Ames.
Could you give us at this point an idea of how this solar array might work?
Betty Baird is our expert. Well, our expert on the political side
of it. Who's not here today.
And was not here today. But in Cedar Falls had 8 acres covered with I don't know how many panels. But the number of panels obviously relates to how many megawatts can be produced. And when I was on city council, I will admit that electricity was probably the most complicated thing on how we are part of a larger, you know, you buy energy when it's low from other places and you bring up certain capacity in what we own locally, and you bring it down when you can buy off of the market. But this is bringing that into the market sphere and making that a greater part, particularly during peak, which is in the summertime when we have the most sun. Sure. And on this large field, because most of our homes here are use gas for heating during the summer, during the winter, but it's our electrical use is high in the summer. So it makes sense to be having solar as part Sure. of how we power our homes and businesses at that point in time. But we also have city land. You need large chunks of land, and we have a previously landfill place.
I just want to add one thing though about the community solar. What's important to understand is that it's hard often for people to have a solar panel on their house. Your neighbors might not like it. There's a certain expense and expertise that have to come into play. Many of us want to reduce our carbon footprint, and having a community solar allows people to buy into a system which is on this solar farm, which they do not themselves have to maintain, but they're credited for the energy of the square footage that they have put in play. And that goes against their own consumption. And so they're replacing some of this other forms of electricity, coal, some of the recycles here in Ames and so on. But it allows people to participate in this carbon footprint reducing activity without having to do it exclusively on their own. They're sort of part of the solar tribe when they get into this, and it's very exciting.
On Wednesday, Amos hosted a very well-organized conference looking at affordable housing in Ames, and the Ames Progressive Alliance, along with other entities in Ames, endorsed this conference, and we were pleased to do that. And we asked Jan Flora to join us today to talk a little bit about some of the highlights of the conference and some of the main points that people walked away with, and particularly at the task force at the end.
Before we get into that, Jan, can you tell us what AMOS stands for?
Mm-hmm. AMOS is a Mid-Iowa Organizing Strategy.
Great. Thank you.
And it's a conglomerate of, well, it's mostly area churches, but other organizations, particularly in Des Moines, it's other organizations.
We have 31 member organizations. In Ames, there are 10, 8 of which are our churches, and the ERP and the Story County Community Housing Corporation is also a member.
Oh.
So I went to one breakout session where we talked. There was a lot of discussion. Whether during the main thing, let's talk about the housing trust fund. Can we do that, about what a housing trust fund is? Other counties have it. It's something that this conference was very much focused on for creating in Ames. Can you tell us what it is?
Okay. Since 2003, the state legislature has funds that it provides to counties and cities in order for them to be able to work on particularly low-cost housing. It's a very flexible system in terms of exactly how you spend the money. You can work toward that goal in many different ways. And it involves, you have to have a governing board which has a maximum of 49% public officials. So the idea is to have the governing board in some way reflect the community as a whole. And it probably would represent about close to $100,000 that we could get from the state legislature, which we're leaving on the table at the moment. We would need to have a quarter of that as matching, for local matching, but I don't think that would be a big problem. And it would give us a permanent institutional presence to advocate and provide support for low-cost, high-quality community housing.
And once the board is established, my understanding, this is a standing, I don't recall the exact terminology, but it's a standing item within the budget. You don't have to go back every year and appeal for it. Once the trust exists, there's a steady flow of dollars into that. There are also a number of other entities, the low-income housing tax credits. There are greenfield, brownfield tax credits. There are historical tax credits. There are a number of vehicles out there to assist with housing. It was just getting this entity happening. And what I was very impressed with at this conference was it wasn't one of those conferences that you go to and at the end you say, oh, I learned a lot of great stuff and, hey, it'd be great if we could do all that. It was, here's a task force. Yeah. And here are the people who have already signed up for this task force. And if anyone else wants to join on, I think contact Jan, correct? And
yes, that would be
with
fine.
A mission, go make this happen. So there's an action item, and there's a group of people who are accountable for making this thing happen. I'm stealing your thunder here, but mm-hmm. I was just very impressed.
No,
so I've got the excitement still going on. But I was
great.
Really impressed. There were 160 people there, and there was a very broad representation from the community. I don't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting to see all the developers there and the bankers and the human service agencies. There was a lot of interest.
I might just say a little bit about the task force that was developed or is in the process of being developed to work on a proposal to the Iowa Finance Authority, who is the state intermediary for the local housing trust funds. I think we have a wonderful group of people, but we need to add some others to cover all of the bases. Eileen Gebbe, who's the pastor at Ames UCC, will be on it as a representative of Amos, and she has experience in California in working on this exactly this kind of thing. Jason Paul is another representative of Amos. Then we have, and I might also mention that the housing conference was sponsored by the City of Ames, ISU, and Story County Board of Supervisors. So we have representatives from each of those on this task force that will write the proposal. So we have Amber Corrieri representing the City Council. We have Warren Madden, who is actually retiring soon from the university but has agreed to be on this task force. So that's really wonderful. And we have Wayne Clinton, Story County Board of Supervisors, along with Dan Culhane, who's president and CEO of the Ames Chamber of Commerce, Dale Vandersheff of the Story County Community Land Trust, and Roberta Malinsky of Youth and Shelter Services. We had representatives from Huxley, Nevada,
and Story City at the conference. Mm-hmm. And since it would be a countywide effort, and so we will hopefully have one or two mayors or other representatives from the smaller communities on the task force as well.
You should go to Mark Jackson. He was there the other day, so I'm sure he'll be available. And yeah. John Kloss has offered to represent the Ames Progressive Alliance.
Yeah, good. And I was thinking that one thing that we didn't deal with was issues of environment and green buildings and so on. So it'll be nice to have the Ames Progressive Alliance on board with your experience with solar.
Well, and when I was speaking to or in the breakout session for developers, one of the criteria or many of the criteria for low-income housing tax credits is long-term affordability, which is building with quality materials so that you can maintain. It's also looking at geothermal and solar. And so I was very encouraged to hear that those are built in to the expectations of receiving these tax credits.
Yes. Yeah. So these will be.
I might also add that we plan to have a developer or two on the task force as
Excellent.
Well, and that will be very, very important. And we had a number of developers that I think are interested in that.
Well, it was music to my ears to also hear people talking about housing studies. It's something I felt that we've needed to do for a long time. Other communities do them to have a better understanding of what people – I mean, it's one thing to say, hey, I think you need affordable housing, but maybe the people who – need affordable housing should have a say in what it is that they need and want, what services they need to be by, what amenities are important to them.
And those people were represented at this conference, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. But I think that's part of the problem is understanding who those people are.
Yeah,
and I'm doing
yeah.
air quotes. They're in our community. They're the people that you drop off your kids with for daycare, they do your hair, they serve you your coffee at Starbucks. And many of those people, the techs at the hospital, they don't live in Ames. And they're part of our community. They contribute to our community, and they need to benefit from being in our community. And I think that's part of what a housing study can also assist in us understanding, not, you know, the demographics of our community, the needs, and dispelling some of those perceptions or misperceptions of who needs affordable housing. And some of the photos that I saw of affordable housing that Hubble, for example, is doing in Des Moines, it's beautiful, and I want to move there. Well, I'm not leaving Ames. Sorry, I didn't mean that. But I just meant I want housing
like that
here.
Yeah.
We had three breakout sessions, so not everybody was able to go to everything. And Victoria went to one that was done by developers. Do you want to say a little bit about inclusive zoning?
That was something new I learned about, that Johnson County is working on, and it's called it's inclusive or inclusionary ordinances.
Inclusionary.
And Gloria zoning. Betcher was there, and she told me she'd made a note of that and was going to look into it for something that Ames might consider that requires.
She's on the city council.
She is. That requires a certain percentage of any area in Iowa City. They're working on something called River Crossing or something, and that was the specific of her presentation. But it can be an area, it can be an entire city, that certain percentages have to be affordable housing. So you don't create islands in your city of low-income housing and high-income, that you have a mixture that
right.
in the long run creates a healthy living community
right, right.
and quality of life for everybody. But you had also, you were in a breakout session. That was the problem. There were three breakout sessions, and they were all good, and it was difficult to decide.
Yeah, you want to go to one of them.
Yeah. Which, you know, that doesn't always happen in conferences.
We had recorders, and we're going to have that written up, and everyone who attended the conference or anyone else who would like to contact us could have copies of that.
Excellent.
We'll put it up on the web as well.
Yeah, and talking of contacts, let's have your contact information for Ames, again, for Ames Progressive Alliance and then for Amos. So okay. Ames Progressive, if you want to get in touch with Ames Progressive Alliance.
We have a Facebook page, Ames Progressive Alliance, and you can also email us at amesprogressivealliance@gmail.com.
Okay. And Amos, it's Amos, Iowa, I think, .org,
I think.
.org, yes, that would be. Amos, Iowa.
I didn't remember exactly what it was. And my email is flora.j@iastate, so people can contact me in that way.
And we will put this up on our website, so these contacts.
Do we have a minute to just say something else about the Ames Progressive Alliance and our upcoming event on April 3rd at Torrent Brewery? It's a game night. We're going to have some fun. We're also going to be talking a little bit about what we've been up to and encouraging people to join us 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock, April 3rd. It's a Sunday. It's for all ages. Mayhem is co-sponsoring and bringing lots of games, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
We've got to cut off here.
Okay.
This has been Local Talk on KHI Community Radio. We've been your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg, and me, Kay Puttock. We've been speaking with members of the Ames Progressive Alliance, Victoria Shapinski and Anne Kinzel, together with special guests today, Jan Flora from Amos. Earlier, we had an update on the fate of bumblebees from Pat Schlarbaum, and we spoke with Iowa-born author Stephen Horn, who'll be visiting Ames, Huxley, and Clinton next week, and who'll be at Chocolaterie Stam on Wednesday for a book signing with wine and live music from our own Paul Hertz. We also spoke with Naomi Biela, another musician who plays at Chocolaterie Stam. And Naomi Biela and her father, Al Biela, provided the special music today, their own composition, Quasimodo. Our theme music is Backtracking, that's what you're hearing right now, by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. This show will air again at noon and 7 p.m. today. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org, or just drop by the studio at 410 Douglas in downtown Ames. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. You can also listen to this show and all our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. You'll find today's show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org, where you can find archives of KHOI's other shows. And please remember that you, as listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.